I'm Donna Carter, and you're listening to Grow on the Go. Today, through Zoom technology, we're going to have a little chat with my friend Paul Gifford. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Donna.
I'm so glad you could join me. Paul and his wife, Rebecca, are dear friends of ours. They have been so committed to us as people in ministry, but also to our ministry organization, STM. Paul's been our treasurer for, I don't know, how long, Paul?
Oh, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, like a long time. And it's so much work and we appreciate it so much. And Rebecca has just been amazing at using her incredible gifts in decorating and making things look amazing for hardly any money in several events that we've had as a ministry. And she helped me do a booth when I was in the Calgary Women's Show. We just appreciate you guys so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, we're going to continue on our summer book club series, and you picked up kind of an unusual book to talk about, but I love it. I love giving our listeners a real variety of books that that may pique the interest of some and not others. Tell us about the book that you've chosen to talk about.
So the book that I'm giving you my view on is called Jerusalem, the Biography, by an author named Simon Sebag Montefiore. And it's a history of Jerusalem from start to almost finish.
Okay, so why is a book like that helpful? It seems like a bit of an obscure book. Tell us a little bit about how you apply what you've learned from that. Like, why is it helpful to you?
I'll just give you a bit of background on as to why I chose the book. And mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that you and I have talked about before is that I love historical novels. You know, I go back to, you know, the 1960s and 70s reading some of James Michener's things like Alaska and Hawaii and,
right.
and books like that. And more recently, a favorite author of mine is a man named Edward Rutherford, who has done historical novels called Paris, London, New York, Princes and Rebels of Ireland, and when you go back and take a look at the history of why places are the way they are, how they started, you know, what they've gone through, in a somewhat fictional standpoint, it gives you a sense of, you know, why people think the way they do.
It's really true. It's really true. And I love, I also love historical fiction. And it's kind of a cheater's way of learning history.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the characters are fictional, but what the circumstances that they're in are historical.
Sure, and one of James Michener's books was called The Source, and it basically it starts from an archaeological dig, and the further down they went, they got older pieces of pottery and things and made stories out of all of that. But this book is not fictional. It's as accurate as, you know, historical documents, historical books can be, based on various sources. And part of the reason why I chose the book is because I'm an avid reader of the Bible, and when I read the Bible, that brings questions to my mind. You know, what was going on? Why was it going on that way? And I'm also a teacher of our grade 1 to 4 Sunday school group at FAC in Calgary. And
so just for our listeners' sake, FAC is First Alliance Church. It's one of the biggest churches in Calgary.
Yeah.
And they have a huge and amazing children's ministry called Discovery Land. So you're you're one of the guys in Discovery Land.
I'm one of the guys there. I'm an old guy, and I think that's a great privilege. But I want to bring, you know, a really informed view on why things were the way they were. So let me tell you a little bit about the book.
Yeah, I love that.
Montefiore writes this book. It's not from a Christian perspective. It's not from a Jewish perspective. It's not from a Muslim perspective. It's not really about the faiths themselves. It's more about the history. And it starts way back in Genesis 14, where there's reference to Melchizedek, the king of Salem. in Abraham's time.
So where was Salem? Somewhere in Mesopotamia, I assume?
No, Salem was the name of Jerusalem before David took over.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So the city was there. It was on a prominent hill, as we all know. But it wasn't, you know, didn't enter into the life of Abraham other than being, he knew of the king of Salem. And you can go take a look at that. But it takes it from there right through the time of the kings of Israel, kings of Judah, and David capturing the city through his through Solomon building the temple, right up till they go off into captivity. It keeps going right through history, through the time of Jesus and beyond, right up to the Six-Day War in the 1967. So,
wow, you know, that's quite a span.
And it's a long book.
How long did it take you to read it?
Well, I borrow ebooks from the Calgary Public Library, and that normally gives me 3 weeks. It took me 2-3 week sessions to get through the book.
Like, I'm sure.
Because
that's not easy reading, I imagine.
And it's not fictional. And it's, I would also say this is, you know, an upfront warning. This is not a book for the faint of heart. It's not your standard Christian, make you feel good, make you challenge you to be a better Christian kind of book. It is intended to be history, but the history of Jerusalem is anything but peaceful.
And quite bloody.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, if that sort of thing bothers you, you know, maybe you want to find something else. But, you know, if you can see through that, and we'll get into that a little bit as we talk here. You know, it does recount the battles, incredible atrocities done, you know, from people coming out to try to conquer Jerusalem from outside forces. But even when there have been multiple faiths living in the same city, you know, the people haven't been nice to one another, you know, and whoever was in charge, you know, took advantage of the others and persecuted the others. And,
right,
you know, it's been continual like that.
So would you say that there's a theme in the book? Is it possible to summarize it?
Oh, man. You know, like I didn't really sense that. I think the author's intent was to provide an accurate as possible history. And history, you know, when I look at it, when I get through all of this, I got my view of what I got out of it. But, you know, it really helps me when I see things, you know, come to life, like what was going on in Jesus' time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
The backdrop, all the history that led up to the attitudes of the day.
Right. And, you know, there are three main things that I got out of the book, three main sections of the book that particularly appealed to me. One was the Maccabean history between the Old and New Testaments. Like what happened after, you know, Nehemiah went back and rebuilt the walls, and Ezra and Zerubbabel rebuilt the temple that the Babylonians had destroyed up until the time of Jesus. And the Maccabeans were a very Orthodox Jewish leadership team. You know, they led it as they wanted this to be, you know, the model for Jews everywhere.
Can I just ask, I think a lot of people would have heard about Masada. Wasn't it the Maccabees that sort of took refuge on Masada?
There were a number of times that they went there, and I didn't follow that train very much, but okay. You hear after Jerusalem was destroyed later after Jesus, like people from the city went and hid in the hills and included Masada and, you know, the other places.
Okay.
But coming out of the Maccabees was Herod the Great. Herod the Great was not a Maccabee. Everybody that had been king or in charge of Jerusalem before that had been from the Maccabee line. Herod, you know, we wonder, how did he get to be king? And he was actually of Jewish faith, but his father was an Edomite. That's a descendant of Esau, not of Jacob. And his mother was Arab. And yet, they followed the Jewish faith. And as the Romans,
I always had the impression that he was half Jewish.
Well, he, you know, faith-wise, yes,
but he was half
Jewish, and he was trying to be Jewish, but he was trying to be king.
Right.
And as we know, power always corrupts, or often corrupts. Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the great things that Herod did was he took the temple that Ezra and Zerubbabel had built, completely destroyed it, took it right down to the bedrock of the mountain, and rebuilt an amazing temple that they say rivaled Solomon's temple. Like, I don't think anybody has pictures of both, but you know what I mean, right? They say about the temple that he built that if you were in the wrong place of the city looking at it when the sun was rising, it could blind you. It was so amazing.
Wow.
Like the construction of this. So, you know, I didn't know before reading this book. I just thought he'd sort of fixed up the second temple that Zerubbabel had built, right?
Well, he was a great builder. He built himself a number of amazing castles, if you want to call them, residences.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, including one in Jerusalem.
Yeah, so, and one on Masada.
Yeah, and, you know, and it became, you know, one of the wonders of the world, as I'm sure the original Temple of Solomon had been.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that. Obviously, Herod got offline. Interesting, if you read some of that history there, the way he really was allowed to remain king was because he went and visited a Roman emperor named Antony, as of Cleopatra and Antony fame, right? Hmm. And, you know, he got sort of was given the right to run the city and the surrounding countryside, and thus he did. So take that sort of standpoint, and I've got a couple of cool scriptures I'd like to read, and these are both in the book. One is from David in Psalm 122, 6 to 9. He said, "Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Say, may those who love you be secure. May there be peace inside your walls. May your people be kept safe. I'm concerned for my family and friends, so I say to Jerusalem, may you enjoy peace. I'm concerned about the house of the Lord our God, so I pray that things will go well with Jerusalem." This is Psalm 122.
Hmm.
You know, I think God gave David a perception that things weren't always going to be peaceful there.
Right.
And certainly, you know, after Solomon's time in particular, as you know, all the things happened with the other kings of Judah, and they are eventually hauled off to Babylon. It was not peaceful. And when Jesus came, it was not peaceful.
Right.
They were, you know, the people wanted him to be an earthly leader that would lead them in a revolt over the Romans, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then fast forward a bit to the time of Jesus. And I'm looking at Luke 19, where Jesus is riding as the triumphal entry, rides the donkey up towards the city of Jerusalem. And it says, "He approached Jerusalem. When he saw the city, he began to weep. He said, 'I wish you had known today what would bring you peace. But now it is hidden from your eyes. The day will come when your enemies will arrive. They will build a wall of dirt up against your city. They will surround you and close you in on every side. You didn't recognize the time when God came to you, so your enemies will smash you to the ground. They will destroy you and all the people inside your walls, and they will not leave one stone on top of another."
And didn't that happen just about 40 years after the death of Christ?
It was around 70 AD when Titus came and besieged the city, and it was because, you know, like you know, one of Jesus' disciples was a fellow named Simon the Zealot. Well, there were people there who wanted to get rid of the Romans, and they would do it. There have been a number of uprisings that have been put down already, and you know, it was not peaceful,
right?
And you think of the time when, you know, Jesus was put on trial about, you know, less than a week after this passage in Luke 19. You know, he was first in front of the Sanhedrin, which was the Jewish leadership. And then he was taken to Pilate, who was the Roman governor of the province. But then Pilate heard that Jesus was from Galilee, and he had also heard that Herod's son, Herod Antipas from Galilee, was in town, so they sent Jesus over to see Herod Antipas, who had wanted to meet Jesus. He was the same Herod who had John the Baptist killed.
Right.
And, you know, how did these things all fit together? You know, the book
like,
just
who's in charge here?
Well, exactly. And nobody wanted to take responsibility for this. The Jews wanted to kill Jesus, but they didn't have the authority. Pilate didn't really want to kill Jesus, but, you know, he thought it'd be easier to do that than to let him go.
And to deal with these Jewish, you know, malcontents.
Right, right. So, again, we know the end of that story with Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection. And, you know, and then we get more history of the area through the book of Acts. So we follow the lives of the apostles. And, you know, by, I would say, you know, AD 60 or so, there's nothing in the Bible. Like, that's sort of when the Bible history ends. Like,
right.
It's possible that one or two of the books of the Bible were written after the walls were, you know, after Titus came and destroyed Jerusalem, but they don't give evidence of that, right?
Well, yeah, and if you take a walk through the Bible, they'll tell you there were 400 years of silence.
Yeah. So, again, at this point, so think of, you know, when all the people were taken off to Babylon, the city's been completely destroyed, the walls torn down, other than the Wailing Wall, which we know is still there from that time.
Which actually isn't a wall of the temple, it's a wall of the Temple Mount, the foundation.
Yeah, the temple was all gone, and, you know, various people ruled it for a few hundred years. It was still under Roman rule, largely pagan Roman rulership, you know, until Constantine came along in 300. He became the first Christian ruler. He had some hand in sort of starting to rebuild the city. And eventually, the next key occupant owner of Jerusalem was those of the Muslim faith.
Mm-hmm. The Moors, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not sure if it was Moors, but there were caliphates that you hear talked about now that, you know, were gradually gathered together all their nomadic families and mounted an army and took over Jerusalem.
Okay.
And why would they want Jerusalem? You know, we hear today that Jerusalem is a holy city to the Muslims.
Mm-hmm. Second only to Mecca.
Right. And why is that? And, you know, by history, Muhammad never physically visited Jerusalem.
So why do they consider it a holy city?
Well, apparently Muhammad had a vision where an angel came to him, and this was not something that happened to him, you know, often in his life, maybe one other time. And he was taken on a journey to a holy city. He never named it as Jerusalem. Probably wasn't even called Jerusalem for a while, you know, when this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But his followers believed that it was Jerusalem. And so, you know, when they got organized and started taking on, you know, kingship or leadership of different countries, they wanted Jerusalem. And so, you know, this was in about 600 AD. Lots of things had happened. The Roman Empire was basically gone, and they came and took over.
And is that when the Dome of the Rock was built, or was that later?
It was built in around 700 AD.
Okay,
so,
right on the site.
Fairly soon after, yeah.
Right on the site of the Temple Mount.
Right.
And it's very bizarre today. We were in Jerusalem a few years ago, and it's really bizarre that, you know, you've got these devout Jews, you know, wanting to touch and pray at the Wailing Wall. And then you've got the Muslims around the Dome of the Rock. And the Muslims do not want the Jewish people there. They're very clear about that. There's this real sense of tension on the Temple Mount.
Not a place of peace, right?
No, not at all.
Well, then the next thing on the scene, this was a few hundred years later, we hear about the Crusades. And this was initially led by the Catholic Church out of France, and they said, why are the Muslims looking after the Temple Mount? Why are they? Why do they own Jerusalem? This is a Christian shrine. We should get it back. And so the battles start again.
Yeah, this is not a time in church history that we can be proud of, that's for sure.
Well, you know, I think sometimes we get caught up in our faith to a point that we don't love the people who don't believe what we believe.
Right.
You know, and as we've talked before, Jesus said to love him and love God and to love our neighbor. And it doesn't mean just the people that think like us. So, you know, it's really, again, a hard period. You know, and eventually the Catholic Church and some of the Orthodox Church from places like Albania and Romania came, and they were, you know, and they would compete for who was running things. And then eventually, as countries like France and England were in their colonial days and trying to take over more of the world, you know, we know the British came and took over Egypt. They're building the Suez Canal. They're sort of competing with France for as to who should be running the city of Jerusalem. And in addition to the Orthodox and Catholic churches, you now have a Protestant church that also sees it as a holy site, plus mm-hmm. the Jewish people who keep trying to come back there, and the Muslims who, you know, have never left, right? Even though others were in charge, they've been there through all of this. And so you can understand the conflict, you know, and even, you know, it takes us right up to today. Lots of good history for the 19th and 20th century, you know, and right up to 1947 when the United Nations, as one of its first significant acts, created the country of Israel, which would be run by Jewish people. And then the migration of Jewish people from all over the world back into Jerusalem and the surrounding area, and all of the you know, and by then, even within Judaism, as you find today, there's almost secular Jews that are just Jewish in
heritage.
You know, right through to Orthodox Jews, and they're all trying to live in the same country together with the Muslims that, you know, would rather them not be there.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's a fascinating place, and I know that I was telling you, since I was in Israel, I read my Bible now with a map, because having... Oh, yeah. Yeah. An understanding of even the geography, let alone the culture and, you know, what happened where, just brings so much more meaning. And I think that's what you're saying, what this has done for you is just providing historical context.
Well, this is what I summarized. I said, reading this book has further opened my eyes that the peace on earth promised by the angels at the time of Jesus' birth was not meant to be an earthly peace, but a peace that surpasses all human understanding within us.
Right.
A peace that only he can give, regardless of who we are, where we live, and under which circumstances.
Wow, you that's beautiful.
And that's ultimately what matters. You know, and that just gives me more desire to teach that to our kids. That, you know, yes, there will be a new heaven and a new earth that Jesus will rule. But it's not going to happen, you know, under our current leadership in different parts of the world. But we can have that peace because of our relationship with Jesus.
And I think that makes so much sense in the context of what, you know, the dominant thinking in Canadian culture is humanistic, right? If you give people enough education, if they're loved and nurtured, then they're going to be good and will have peace. But that history shows us that is not the case. You know, that is not the only peace is peace with God, and the only peace on earth will be when Christ reigns.
Right.
Both in our hearts and in the world, yeah.
Yeah. So again, you know, with the disclaimer, this is not a book for the faint of heart. Great historical read. I would say, you know, I don't have anything to compare it to, really. I would say that the author gives reasonable acceptance of the biblical accounts, the Jewish accounts, and, you know, it said for those who just wanted to know more of what's why the country is the way it is today, why it was the way it was at Jesus' time, or even back in, you know, the days of David and his successors. Amazing book, really.
Doesn't sound like a beach read. But a lot of us aren't going to get to the beach this year because of COVID anyway, so take it out into your backyard.
My brother, who's a retired Alliance pastor, would make it a beach read.
Oh, would he?
He had a degree in history before he went to divinity school. So.
Oh, man. You know, we used to vacation with another pastor, and he used to read on the beach with a highlighter. And I just said, you know, Brian, that's just wrong. Well, I am so grateful for you sharing this. I think a few of our readers will say, that's something I've got to read. And some of us will just say, wow, I didn't understand that history. And maybe there's a way I can get some more context to, you know, my Bible reading, even if it just comes from, you know, the maps and the commentaries in the back of your Bible. Yeah. There's a lot to
us there. One of the other cool things they have is the family trees. Of the different groups that have, you know, going back to, you know, David and his family tree, you know, to the Maccabees, to the Herods, to the Muslims, to the, you know, all the different groups that have been king of Jerusalem through this.
So you're not one of the guys that skips over the genealogies in the Gospels, hey?
You know, I try to read it.
Yeah,
you
know, it's there for a reason. It's relevant.
You know, there's good reasons, and you know, one thing I get from reading Jesus' lineage is that he chooses imperfect people that have screwed up big time, and uses them for his ultimate glory.
That is so true. That is so true. Well, thank you so much for giving us this context. That's very helpful. And to our listeners, we'll have the title and description of this podcast on Faith Strong today, so that if you want to read it yourself, you can. Or even if you just want to scan certain parts of it to fill in some of the gaps in your Bible knowledge. Don't forget to share this podcast with someone that you think might be interested, and to like and share. That helps us. And we so appreciate you being with us here today. Thanks, Paul. I'm Donna Carter, inviting you to grow on the go.
Thanks for listening to Grow on the Go. Share this episode on social media and find more great programs at faithstrongtoday.com.